True wealth isn't just what you earn. It's the life you live and the legacy you leave. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. My guest today is Sandra Geisler. She is the Director of Tax Planning for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. And one of the things, Sandra, that is, I'm sitting here doing this, and I didn't think that I would still be working at my age. I thought, you know, I'm going to be retired, because in my mind, retirement was, well, we always talk 59 and a half. And then it was like, well, 65, maybe, when you get your Medicare. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm way beyond that. And I'm still working, and I'm still in love with it. Coming to work every day here, and all the amazing people that work here and our clients, is just too alluring to abandon that opportunity of spending time. And of course, our new location is so much fun. But for me, because I'm working like many people still are, tax planning is so important to me, because it's the most ridiculous thing, but I can put money in my 401k, but I got to take it out.
Yes.
Does it make sense? You know, and so it's really incredibly important to consider your lifestyle and what you want to do. And you may retire fully and then find that it's not really what you want to go back to work. And so thinking about these things through as you're doing your planning is really critical. What are some of the things that you suggest people think about as they're approaching? And I would guess approaching retirement can even be, what, 5 or 10 years in advance? Because
absolutely.
You want to be able to look at those buckets of money and determine, here's when you retire, we're going to spend from. We're going to have Social Security. If you're blessed, you have a pension, or you're going to have this. You have income from properties coming in. You have all these different things. Those are important strategies.
Mm-hmm. I think the most important thing, two most important things, when I talk to people who are still in their working years, 10, 15, even 20 years pre-retirement, one is to just make sure that they're saving for retirement. I like to work with people and help them understand where they can save. So potentially they have a 401k or a 403b. They may have a tax-deferred option. They may have an after-tax option. They may have a Roth option. What works best for those particular clients? Some clients also have an opportunity to put money into a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA, completely separate from their employer plan. So key is making sure that they're doing some level of saving for those retirement years.
Well, and Sandra, I've been in several meetings where my client has had a very large 401k,
mm-hmm.
very, very large.
Yes.
And they spend everything else they make, and mm-hmm. they have their house, and they travel. And I know that in some cases, you made the decision or made a recommendation, put it into the match, but don't put in any extra, and start building up that savings account.
Yes.
Because they didn't realize that if they have to live off of that 401k and they want to take $100,000 a year or something, that automatically puts them in the highest tax bracket.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if people have an opportunity to work with us, again, you know, 5 to 10 years before retirement, really critical for us is to look to see where they're saving and how they're saving. Because there are situations, as you mentioned, where, yes, we love to defer the taxes, right? But we don't want to be in the situation that woman I talked about earlier is in. We don't want to get into our 70s when we have RMDs and we've got this income stream and tax rates are higher than when we were working. So looking to see how they're saving and how much they're saving frequently will give suggestions. If people have already a very large tax deferred account balance, we may recommend that they switch to putting money into their Roth. That money will be tax-free growth for the remainder of their lives and into their heir's life. So having the flexibility, having that tax stratification across your accounts and having ample balances in each of those types of accounts gives you an extreme amount of flexibility for spending in retirement.
And one of the things that we often talk to clients about is making sure they have a home equity line of credit.
Yes.
Because if they do run at the end of the year and they're going to have to take money out for an emergency, take it on your home equity and pay it the next year.
Yes.
Perhaps.
Yes.
So there's so many things. And I know that with many people who are retiring, they just, you know, they've worked so hard. And you were speaking about your little old lady.
I'm sorry. I should have rephrased that.
The little old lady. And all of a sudden, you know, she'd been saving her whole life. And just think about that. And this is just an approximate, but she went into the 28% bracket, so 28 cents on every dollar that she was taking and forced to take out of her IRA went to Uncle Sam.
Yes.
And if it had been looked at differently when she was saving, it could have been reduced. It could have been different. But I mean, that would break your heart to think about all that money that she was having to give away. I mean, for me personally, I would prefer to give it to charity.
Yes, yes. And we have solutions for that as well.
Exactly.
I think honestly, the opportunity that taxpayers have who are over the age of 70 and a half to do qualified charitable distributions, also we refer to them as QCDs, I think that's honestly one of the most underused tax strategies in place. Frequently, I talk to newer clients who don't even know that that strategy exists. And basically what it allows you to do is to take money directly out of your IRA. If it's given directly to a charity, it's a non-taxable event.
Or a church. Or
right?
Any kind of
501c3, anything, any organization that you would normally get a charitable deduction for, you're allowed to take from the IRA to that charity. It's tax-free. Okay. I mean, there is no better strategy than not having to pay tax on that.
Well, and I know many times you sat down with a new client and they are very gifting. And
yes.
They gift to their church and they're writing it out of their checkbook and they don't realize they could take it out of their IRA and there's no tax and they're going to eventually have to take it out anyways.
Exactly.
So you're right. It's just an amazing strategy.
And I hear from people, much like you said, I'd much rather give it to the church or to my charity of choice than to give it to the government.
Yeah.
And we can help, you know, a lot of times towards the end of the year, we'll work with clients and they'll come to us and they'll say, how much should I give?
Yeah.
How much should I give to maximize that, my tax situation this year? And we can give them that number.
Yes. I know it's such an amazing thing. And often I know when new people come in that are just sort of checking out Ellen Becker and they sit down with a tax person, it's like, I didn't even know you could sit down with a tax person before the 15.
Well, not every tax person can have that conversation.
But I mean, it's like a present that we give them.
Yes.
It's very wonderful.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are happening right now in 2026. And one of the things that I always like to bring up, Sandra, is that most people don't know that if you are helping out your kids and if you're helping out your grandkids and you're paying for braces and you're paying for school and you're paying for helping them out with doctor's appointments, and I always feel so blessed when we have the opportunity to do that. We can't afford to do that. If they write those checks directly to the health care agent or the doctor, the dentist, the school, private school, whatever, they don't have to consider those as part of their gifting.
That's correct. That's correct. If it goes directly. So you can always give to any individual, your family, your grandchildren. There is an annual limit, which only indicates where we need to file a gift tax return. So that limit for 2026, as it was in 2025, is $19,000. So you could give me $19,000 and you would not have to report that. If you wanted to, that would be fine, by the way.
And your husband.
Yes, and my husband too.
Yes. Anyone.
Anyone.
Any listener.
An unlimited number of people you can do that for. As soon as you give $20,000 a year, then you're required to file a gift tax return. That's really just a requirement to let the IRS know that you have given away part of your estate prior to your passing. And there's no tax associated with it. There's no tax to you as the giver. There's no tax to the recipient. It really just says, Karen, you have about $15 million in your lifetime to give away. After $15 million, anything that's left over is going to be subject to estate tax. So if you give $20,000 less the $19,000 exclusion, you've given away $1,000 of your $15 million, and that has to be reported. So we don't work with a huge number of clients that have 15 million. It's 15 million per person, not per couple. But nonetheless, it is a requirement that we report those gifts.
Well, here's a real important thing. That's what it is today. That doesn't mean that's what it'll be
in
2 years. And that's where the tax strategies come in. So I know that I have talked to my attorney, I've talked to you, like, what should I do? There's a possibility that the tax laws will change.
Yes.
And so just staying on top of it is so critically important.
It really is. You know, last year was a great example of that. We had the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, and we knew that there was probably going to be a tax law passed in 2026. I had been telling clients all year long, don't expect anything until the end of the year, because that's when they like to pass tax law. So nobody was happier than me when we actually had the tax law change in July, because that gave us 6 months to actually understand the bill and to actually put some strategies in place and to work with our clients about some of the new things that changed. The big, you know, crown jewel of that tax package was really the permanent extension of the tax rates and the tax brackets that we have. You might recall that those changed in 2018 when Trump was president the first time, and they were now made permanent. The first tax law had a sunset clause that was due to sunset at the end of 2025. So we were working with clients assuming that potentially we were going to go back to the higher tax rates, after the sunset. So that was what everybody was hoping for, was that we would get a permanent extension of those lower tax rates. What I don't think most of us banked on was all of the other things that came with that tax law. There was really sweeping change. It was probably bigger than the tax law changes we had in 2018 in terms of some of the new deductions that were put in place, and some of the changes, you know, to the deductions. We had a change to the state and local tax deduction cap. So there were a lot of things embedded in tax strategy that really that were affected when we had that new tax law passed. You mentioned the senior bonus.
Yes.
That was one that was kind of interesting. We heard a lot during the campaigning for the presidency about not having Social Security taxed. As many of you probably realize, your Social Security is taxable based on your total income. It's typically referred to as your provisional income. Many people see their Social Security taxed at the maximum level, which is 85% of the benefit. So 85% of the benefit is taxed at your ordinary income tax rates. So there was talk about not having Social Security income taxed at all. Unfortunately, once they started to put the numbers to it, they realized that there was pretty significant income coming in, and so they weren't able to get that through the budget process. So the substitution really was in the form of this senior bonus. And so the senior bonus started in 2025. So the tax returns that we'll be preparing in the next couple of months are going to potentially be eligible for the senior bonus. You do need to be 65 or older. If only one spouse is 65, they would be eligible for the senior bonus and not the other spouse. But it's an additional $6,000 deduction. Again, for a married couple, we could see potentially $12,000. That's on top of the standard deduction. The really smart people have calculated that means that about 85% or so of the people who pay tax on their Social Security prior to the senior bonus probably won't pay tax going forward. It is not directly tied to Social Security, but it was sort of the replacement for not having your Social Security taxed at all. Now, there are some income limits on the senior bonus. So once income is over $75,000 for a single person or $150,000 for a married couple, the bonus deduction starts to be reduced. It's reduced about 6% for every $1,000.
And that takes in any payments out of your IRA,
yes,
out of your 401k.
Correct.
So that's where people get stumped up quite a bit, as they think, well, I'm only making much. And then
yes,
they take out a big hunk out of their together a married couple.
Exactly.
And so those are the important strategies that you're always talking about.
Yes, we have to really start with what is a person's gross income. And as you said, sometimes people don't really recognize, they look at what they receive potentially in a pension check or the Social Security as their income. But frequently we have portfolios that are producing income. So we have interest and dividends, capital gains in a market year like we had last year. Some of the portfolios had significant gains, and that really can increase AGI to the point where some taxpayers are not going to be eligible for that bonus.
Which, when we work with you, Sandra, is so nice because we'll look at that tax and you'll say, Karen, if there are any losses you can take.
Yes.
And sometimes we just say, there are no losses. It's so nice.
That's
but
right.
Then tax-wise, they go, ooh.
A good problem to have.
A good problem to have. But those are the things that we can plan for. Mm-hmm. And we know that we can make some significant changes and do some harvesting. So those are the things that I think set us apart, is that we're always looking at tax advantages. We're looking at where to take the money from. And so often when individuals are not working with anyone, not just us, but not working with anyone, and they pull money out of a mutual fund or something just themselves, they don't really realize the gains that are coming out. They really don't look at which portfolio should I take it out of, which is the right place. And that's the piece that when you look at the whole picture, you look at the tax, you'll say, well, we're not taking it out of there because we don't need any more gains. We're going to take this, we're going to do that, or something out of the Roth. Or
yes.
It's having those buckets that you can really use in order to maximize the money that you get to keep.
That's really where that flexibility comes in. I remember a time when I was in private practice and I was working with a client who had just retired, and he was going to roll over his 401k, but didn't really understand that concept. So the 401k company sent him a check and he cashed it. And that entire 401k balance was taxable to him. He had no option at that point.
Gosh.
Yes. Because he wasn't working with a financial planner who could guide him on some of those important decisions that are made at retirement time.
Well, and some of the other decisions that are important is if someone is blessed to have that pension, what amount should you take? Do you take the full pension and have nothing remainder? Do you take less so that your spouse has a remainder? Those are really important decisions. And should you move it over? Should you leave it where it is? Mm-hmm. I know one of the big things that I'll just put out there, because the market has been so good, if you are thinking about retiring, please work with somebody, because one of the things that you want to do is talk to that person prior to retiring, so that if you're going to do a rollover, you go to cash before you roll it over. Because if the market corrects and you get stuck in that downturn, you may think you have something coming and you could end up with 10, 15, 20, 25% less. So I always say within that last year of your retirement, start moving your money out of stocks, move it into the cash portion of your 401k so you know exactly the amount of money you have, roll it over and then invest it again. And if the market does correct, what a good time. You've already preserved your money and you can put it in lower.
Absolutely.
So
yeah, that's an ideal.
There are some strategies prior to retirement that I think are really critical. And don't forget, when you retire, many times people lose their insurance.
Mm-hmm.
The insurance doesn't go with them. It's not portable. And so that's another thing, because often we look at if somebody in retirement, as they age and if they get sick and they have to use up a big portion of their retirement account and their spouse has a very small retirement account, insurance might be a really good answer. And if you have insurance already in place, and then we talk about disability insurance and what happens if someone gets sick. There are so many pieces.
There are so many pieces.
To that puzzle to really think about.
I think health insurance is a huge huge concern for people, especially retiring before age 65.
And disability. I mean, do you have enough money coming in? If something happens to you, how will you live? And is your disability for doing anything or doing your own? Is it taxable? Is it tax-free because you've been paying out of your own money? So there are just a lot of different things to look at.
Absolutely.
And to consider.
Yeah. One of the other questions that is one of the very most frequent questions that I get for people in those pre-retirement years is when to start Social Security.
Yes.
And that's always a really interesting conversation, because if we knew when people were going to stop collecting, meaning they pass away, it would be a really easy decision. And so there's so many considerations and so much conversation that we have about people's spending, about what their portfolio looks like, about preserving their portfolio for their heirs, and spending the money from Social Security. Do we collect right at 62? Do we defer to a full retirement age? Are we planning on working at all during that period of time? Are we going to defer all the way to age 70? At age 70, it becomes a very easy decision, right? Because it doesn't grow anymore after age 70. But those are really interesting conversations that we have to make sure that clients are maximizing their Social Security benefits as well. Because, of course, there's a taxable component to that. And if we have that additional income, that potentially means that we can't draw additional money out of their IRAs and still maintain a certain gross income level that's going to keep them in a lower tax bracket.
And often we have so many clients come in and they own property and they own buildings and mm-hmm. they own apartment buildings or condos, and they want to know, should I sell, and what do I do with the money, and what is the impact, because they were earning on that, they were taking in income, and then all of a sudden it's like, I just don't want to fix up houses anymore, I don't want to worry about roofs, I don't want to do this anymore, I want to sell, should I sell? And then looking at what is that impact, is should we do it this year, next year? And of course, it's always a gamble, because you don't know what the market's going to be like, mm-hmm. just like anything else.
Right.
And
There's a depreciation component there, right? So we need to educate clients. Frequently, clients will say, well, my building is worth X and I've paid the mortgage off years ago. And they're kind of expecting that dollar amount. You know, that's the gross proceeds that they're thinking is going to go into their retirement nest egg. We have to talk to them about what the tax impact of that property sale is going to look like. And it's usually higher than what people are expecting.
And often with my own charity, Pillows with Wings, last year we received so much stock mm-hmm. out of people's 401ks. Mm-hmm. So people don't really realize within your 401k, you don't necessarily have to take cash. You could take equities or whatever's in that portfolio out and put it into your trust or put it into another account. Just because you take it out, the only thing you have to do is pay tax. You don't have to spend it, but you have to pay tax unless you give it to a charity. And last year we received so much stock as the gifting out of people's retirement accounts because it was so highly appreciated.
Well, and donating stock even out of a taxable account, out of a savings account is a great strategy, especially if you have considerable capital gain.
Actually better. I think you're right. It was out of regular accounts rather than the IRAs.
And that's something we'll always want to counsel clients about, because if they sell that stock to create the cash to give to the organization, they will be required to pay the tax on that capital gain. So if we have highly appreciated stock in a portfolio, we would much prefer to give the stock to the charitable organization, who of course is going to sell it immediately for the cash to fund the organization. But as a charitable organization, they are not paying tax on that gain. So it's a wonderful strategy, especially when we have those highly appreciated stocks in the portfolio.
Yes. And opening up a fund, a family fund, mm-hmm. looking at that, does that mm-hmm. make sense and how to do that?
Oh, absolutely. That's typically referred to as a donor advised fund, kind of a charitable savings account. And really, from a tax perspective, what that allows us to do is time when we get the deduction. So we just talked about property sales, right? That's a year where, you know, you're going to have an unusually high, a spike of income on your tax return. That's going to be the year that we want to look at where can we get some extra deductions, right? Give potentially giving away some highly appreciated securities
to Uncle Sam.
Absolutely. To get that additional charitable deduction is huge.
So, Sandra, we have come to the end of our
podcast. Oh, my gosh, we're having so much fun.
What are a couple things that you might mention for individuals to plan for this year to start thinking about as we have just, you know, going to be approaching our April 15th deadline, but then to plan for the next year? What are the things that you would recommend?
Well, I think if you have time right now, this is a great time for you to be looking at getting your tax situation in place for 2025. So now's the time that you're going to be getting documents in the mail. You're going to be reaching out to your tax advisor, your tax preparer, or, you know, if you self-prepare. But let's get 2025 wrapped up. There's no need to wait until April 15th. No need to procrastinate. Let's kind of see where we are in 2025, because that can be a baseline for what things are going to look like in 2026. That can tell you how much potentially you're going to have in interest or dividends going forward into 2026. You'll see your pension amount. You'll know your Social Security amount with the cost of living adjustment. And then you can kind of see where you are tax-wise. Then I think what's a really good idea is to look at what does your year look like? What kind of spending are you planning for this year? Where's those funds going to come from? You know, do you need new vehicles this year? Do you need a new roof on the house? Do you have a wedding coming up? Oh, I know about that. Do you want to take some trips? You know, kind of map out what the year looks like for you from a cash flow perspective. We have our regular monthly, but what are those extra things? And kind of look to see where you might have an opportunity to take those funds. That's the perfect spot for your financial advisor to step in and your tax advisor to say, okay, now I know where you are. I know what you need, and here's how we're going to get you there.
Sandra, thank you so much. This was like great information, and it's just like sitting here talking to a friend.
Yes, so it's always a pleasure, Karen.
It makes it so wonderful. And I just want to remind you that if you would like, you can go and share this podcast with your friends, and we would love that. And we hope to see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Money Sense, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. If you found today's conversation helpful, we encourage you to share it with a friend or family member, and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. At Ellen Becker Investment Group, we believe that education is the foundation of confident financial decisions. That's why we're proud to bring you insights from experienced professionals to help you build true wealth beyond just money. Please know, this podcast is intended for general informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized financial advice. Before making any financial decisions, we recommend consulting with a qualified advisor who understands your unique situation. For more resources, visit ellenbecker.com. We'll be back soon with more insights to help you live with clarity and confidence.